Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
And that was a total and complete lie. I wasn't going to be on the other side of the country.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
MJF, CVV, pleasure to sit down with you.
We're getting off on a bad foot here, and I don't want to, because you seem like a nice guy, Chris. You really do. Don't ever fucking abbreviate your name like you're some hotshot around me ever again.
Okay? Sorry, Chris Van Vliet.
That's kind of my thing.
Cool? Maxwell Jacob Friedman.
Yeah, but only I get to do the MJF thing. You're not, you're no MJF. So let's start this over. Do another introduction. I'll do your thing. There you go. Go for it.
All right. Chris Van Vliet with Maxwell Jacob Friedman.
Still shitty.
I know that it was your dream growing up to play pro football. If you could go back, obviously things worked out pretty well for you.
It worked out pretty good.
If you could go back and change anything to make that happen, would you change anything?
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions.
That is such a nice, silky suit.
Thank you. You think the Joker might wear something like this?
I think he would appreciate that, and then he would probably...
Probably
cut your lips off or something, just for fun.
We'd like to also check on your socks, because it's common knowledge that your sock game is strong.
And what are your favorites? Ooh. What do you look for in a sock? That's sort of a Space Invaders?
That's what's going on here. I don't know if we can see that there, but
I mean,
yeah.
If you get your leg a little higher, we can.
Use your core.
Is strong.
Chris Van Vliet, how you doing?
I'm doing amazing. Tom, thank you so much for having me on.
What socks have you got on today?
Oh, wow. I like that you asked that. Wow, how did you?
The Chris Van Vliet sock stories are infamous.
I will describe these in great detail, as you can't see them. They are a sock from a company called Bugatti, and these are flamingos, but the flamingos are like a teal blue with a little bit of a purple background behind it. You know what? I'll put this on my Instagram so that people will know what I'm talking about here.
Oh, sneaky. There was the reason that I ask is because, like, for people who don't know, you're a big sock aficionado.
I am, and this all kind of stemmed from, like, so look, I've been working in television I've been fortunate to do it my entire career, and I've been so grateful for this opportunity. And most of my hosting at the start was like MTV style shows, and like, you know, I was wearing like t-shirts and jeans, like what you see me wearing for a lot of these interviews on YouTube. And then as my job started to progress, I started to have to wear suits, and I'm like, wow, man, I feel like I'm selling a little bit of my soul here. I felt like I was like, you know, turning corporate or something, having to wear suits all the time. But I'm like, you know what though? I can still wear fun socks, and they won't be seen on TV, but at least I'll know in my heart that if I'm wearing a suit up top, my socks can still be fun. So that's kind of where it all stemmed from. It was like me in this tiny, weird rebellion against having to wear suits all the time. And now, ironically, I enjoy wearing suits.
Is there a particular dealer where you get them from?
So this is going to sound like super snobby, but I got in with this company like probably 5 years ago called Book a Tailor, and they make these incredible custom suits. And the cool part about that is you can put whatever you want on the inside. So I had these like cool liners on the inside, and then whatever catchphrase you want. So I have suits that say on the inside, like it's embroidered on the inside, to be the man, you got to beat the man, and other such ridiculous wrestling catchphrases.
Does Ric Flair know that you have a Ric Flair suit?
Ric Flair doesn't know, but I wore that suit when I interviewed The Rock for Hercules. And I sat down and I said, before we start, Rock, I got to show you this. And I open it up and he like looks in and he like squints. He's like, to be the man, you gotta beat the man. Okay, that's great, man.
That must be great for like for Dwayne Johnson, who will be doing those media junkets all day. Suddenly you walk in and there's the wrestling connection.
Yes and no. I think that The Rock has done so much more, you know, since leaving wrestling, that when I come in and like, obviously we got to talk about whatever movie it is he's promoting, but I always try to slide in like at least one wrestling question, and he's so gracious and he's always good and he always answers it. But I also feel like there's this part of him that's kind of like, oh, you want to talk about that thing I did 15 years ago? Okay, sure. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, The Rock's awesome, but at the same time, I think he's like, yes, but I've done all this other stuff since.
I think it's all about phrasing it in such a way where it's an aside rather than like the main thing you're there to talk about.
Of course. But like, here's a great example. When I interviewed him for Moana, I worked on this question for so long so I could phrase it in a way that would both be like good for the movie, but like also good for us as wrestling fans. So I was like, hey, look, Moana lived on this island and everything could have been great on that island, but she decided she wanted to go outside of that island and see what was beyond, you know, the ocean. I said, this is kind of like you, Rock. You could have stayed in WWE. You could have broken Ric Flair's record. Everything would have been great, but you decided to go beyond that, just like Moana. Why? And he's like, oh, I appreciate how you brought that around there. Yeah, good job, man.
There is something special in that moment as an interviewer when you ask a question and you go, yep, nailed it.
Although I feel like sometimes, and you probably experienced this because you're a fantastic interviewer, I feel like there's sometimes when it's genuine, when someone's like, oh my God, wow, never thought of it like that. And then there's another time when they're just saying, huh, that's a great question. And they're just like trying to buy themselves more time because they're like, yeah, I don't know, that's actually not a good question, but I don't know how to answer it. So I'll say that's a good question.
Have you ever had that where you know you've asked the question and it's fallen completely flat?
Oh, yeah. Come on. Every interview. That happens all the time. You know this.
It is true.
Especially when you do, as you know, these hour-long interviews, not every single question is a home run. And the thing that I really appreciate about you, Tom, is you make these interviews just conversations. And that's something that I've always tried to do, you know, in the stuff that I do. Like, I don't think that interviews should ever be question, answer, question, answer. You know what I mean?
It's more fun that way. And by the way, thank you. That means a lot. It's more fun that way when it's just two people talking. And I think, everybody finds out more about everybody when it's just a chat rather than like a solid, like, you know, to break the fourth wall on this. Like, I'm currently looking at probably 6 or 7 bullet points to bring up with yourself. And I'm confident enough to go, do you know what? We're going to flow with it. And if we get to bullet point 6 before we get to bullet point 3, that's fine. Nobody dies. We'll just figure it out along the way. We'll have
with it. That's a masterclass right there in interviewing. And I think for anybody that's listening to this right now that wants to start a podcast or wants to start a YouTube channel, you've got to listen to these words here because I think too many people overthink it. And if you and I, Tom, were going to go out for a beer tonight and, you know, it's going to take
one. The pubs are shut.
I know, please don't rub it in. But if we were to go in a time machine back 2 weeks ago when we could have a beer, you wouldn't go, oh my God, I got to spend 2 hours. What are we going to talk about? You just go, the conversational flow.
Yeah. And then if it doesn't, you just book a taxi and you get away.
That's right. Oh, you know what? I'm good. I got to work early in the morning. What do you mean? You said you had all night? No, I just, I got to
no,
text.
Just...
Yeah.
I've just had a phone call. The phone hasn't rang. It's all in my mind. Chris, we're sending you on a desert island. And we're sending you on that desert island with a DVD featuring 3 wrestling matches that you can watch over and over again. What would the first wrestling match that you have on this DVD, what would you like it to be?
Well, it's got to be the greatest match of all time, which was WrestleMania 18, Rock Hogan, icon versus icon. And I'm not just saying this because I was there. I was there in the 16th row. The energy in that crowd was incredible. And even just talking about it right now, I have goosebumps.
Hulk Hogan, the stage is set. WrestleMania, the biggest matchup of all time. A matchup that will determine who will go down as the greatest ever. And Hogan, last week, you asked The Rock. You stood in the ring and asked The Rock what you're gonna do when Hulkamania runs wild on you. You see, Hogan, what you're failing to realize, The Rock wants you to remember, is The Rock wants Hulkamania to run wild on him tonight. The Rock wants Hulkamania in all of his glory. What you gonna do, Hulk Hogan, when you face The Rock tonight, when you've got butterflies in your Hulk stomach, and you reach down to feel if you still got a Hulk strudel? Hulk Hogan, what you gonna do when The Rock runs wild on you? But you know what, Hogan? The Rock will tell you exactly what you're gonna do. The Rock will tell you, you're gonna feel the electricity like you've never felt before. Electricity that has happened like never before. Hulk Hogan, you are gonna hear 70,000 strong chanting your name, chanting The Rock's name. Hulk Hogan, you will see the people's elbow come crashing down on your chest. And Hogan, above all else, you will, good God Almighty, you will smell what The Rock is cooking.
It is going to be an epic a little bit later here tonight. There's a lot of Hogan fans, a lot of Rock fans, and it's going to be decided one-on-one.
Energy in that crowd was amazing. Rock was supposed to be face. Obviously, that changed instantly when both Rock and Hogan got into the ring. And it was amazing. And then when I interviewed Rock for the first time in 2012, I told him. I was so excited to tell him that was my favorite match of all time. And he goes, oh, yeah? Who are you cheering for? I'm like, why? It's The Rock. I'm like, yeah, I was cheering for Hogan. He's like, oh, yeah, me too.
What I love about that, it's a great example of when of the art of wrestling, in the sense it's different to a pantomime, it's different to a play, it's different to a movie, in the sense that you're in front of a live crowd, and the masters of it, the true masters of it, can read that crowd and change things on the fly. As you rightly said, The Rock went in and he was going to be the good guy, and the crowd, you in particular, Chris, I'm sure, get swept up in it, and suddenly they're booing The Rock, and the shtick changes, and they're able, as masters of what they do, to change the match as it goes to suit what the crowd is reacting to. And it's a
now interestingly, for sure, interestingly enough, so when I talked to Hulk Hogan, I told him, of course, that was my favorite match of all time, and I said, I gotta ask you, at the end of the match, did you know that the NWO was going to come out and beat you up? And he's like, oh, I had no idea, brother. The ref just told me to stay in the ring. I didn't know why. Which is, you know, was interesting because The Rock had won the match. Why was Hogan staying in the ring? And then, of course, you know, it all played out. And I just thought that was so interesting that all of this, you know, the rules within the match and then what happened after the match all happened as it was happening.
So all of it was basically one massive audible. That's incredible. So you were there as a fan at that point. So you arrive at the arena. Like, of all the matches for that night, was it Hogan Rock that you were excited for?
Absolutely. So I'm 18 years old at the time. I'm as old as WrestleMania is old. So
same.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So WrestleMania 18. I'm 18 years old, and I went with two of my friends, and I'm in college at the time, and we had spent. I'm actually looking at the ticket stub right now. Let me see this, which is amazing. To sit in the 16th row, I spent $126 for the ticket, $135.50, or that's Canadian, actually, including the exchange, or including the fees. So $135, and I'm saying to my friends, like, man, $135, that's a lot of money. Like, we're 18 years old. Like, that's a lot. Like, should we just sell these tickets? Like, there's scalpers all around the arena. And this is at Sky Dome in Toronto. It's like a half hour train ride from my hometown, which is Pickering. So I've gone from my college town, driven back to my hometown, and then taken the train with my friends into the cities, or into Toronto for WrestleMania and for, you know, to be at the Sky Dome. And my one friend was like, you know what? We could probably get like $200. That'd be a lot of money. Yeah, maybe we should do that. And then the one friend's like, what are you talking about? This is WrestleMania. We should go in. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, we should definitely go in. And the second we just walked into the arena, and that was like 3 hours before the actual show started. But as soon as we walked in there, it was like, oh, yeah, we made the right decision. There was just such a buzz in the air. And I also feel bad because that buzz came to a total crescendo during the Rock Hogan match. And then a lot of people forget there were two matches after that. There was the women's match, and then there was the championship match, which was Triple H and Chris Jericho. And the crowd was so dead for those matches. I've said it before, but I'll say it again. Rock Hogan should have absolutely been the main event of that show.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that ever since then. The match order was slightly wrong on that particular night. But the main thing is the reaction to that Rock Hogan match was something else. You say you're as old as WrestleMania, so I'm assuming that you've been a fan. Well, that wasn't your first wrestling event. When did you become a wrestling fan?
That was my first WrestleMania, but I started watching wrestling in like the late 80s, and it wasn't like crazy passionate about it. It just happened to be on at my grandparents' house, and my grandfather would have it on. He wasn't really a big fan either. It was just, you know, Saturday, and it was an interesting thing to watch. So I grew up with the larger than life stars, of course. You know, it was Hogan and Macho Man, but also like Sergeant Slaughter and Repo Man. And I was just kind of drawn in by these larger than life characters. But it wasn't till the Attitude Era that I really got sucked in and became the crazy fan that I am now. And it was interesting because I was on the high school wrestling team. And I remember a few of my friends on the high school wrestling team watched pro wrestling. And I'm like, I can't believe you watch that fake stuff. We do the real stuff in here. And I don't know what happened. It was just like, it was on TV. Every Monday night, I had a good friend who loved watching it every Monday. And we would talk on the phone. And then as soon as 9 o'clock hit, he'd go, I got to go. Wrestling's on. And this pattern continued. And eventually I'm like, all right, well, I'll watch it with you. We'll stay on the phone here. And I just got into it. It was McMahon and Austin and that feud that they had that really sucked me in. And man, I watched it. I watched everything. I watched Raw on Mondays. I would switch back to Nitro. Raw repeated again in Toronto on that Tuesday, and I would watch that again. I watched Thunder. I watched ECW on Fridays. I was watching SmackDown. I watched Jacked and Metal and Sunday Night Heat. I watched everything, and I taped it all so that if I had nothing better to do, I would play the tapes of that.
So you've always got a backup of wrestling you can watch when there's no wrestling to watch.
That was exactly it, because the internet was very much in its infancy back then, and you weren't able to really, definitely weren't able to see matches back then. You were able to see clips. We're talking like 97, 98, 99. And I, of course, you know, like so many other wrestling fans, I wanted to be a pro wrestler. And I was part of a backyard wrestling federation in my hometown. Oh, yeah. And the plan was once I got into college, I was going to go to wrestling school, which I did briefly, but yeah, I was all in on this dream.
I want to talk about this Backyard Wrestling Federation,
please.
Chris. What was the federation called?
I was the HCW, which was... That's so stupid.
Right, embrace the cringe. I know your toes are curling through your fantastic socks, but embrace the cringe with me, Chris. Tell me the name of your promotion. Say
this
with pride.
The HCW, which was Hardcore Championship Wrestling. Actually, my friends at the time wanted it to be Hardcore Canadian Wrestling, and I said, hey, hold on, guys, let's not just limit ourselves here. Let's be HCW Hardcore Championship Wrestling. And I was the biggest heel in the company, Chris Sharp, the professional. Oh. Chris Sharp, who was very inspired by Triple H, right down to the tape I had on the tape on my wrist on my left hand, the tape on my wrist and hand on my right hand. Just like Triple H.
So you were the professional Chris Sharp. Sharp with an E?
No E, but I was sharp. Okay. Walking, sharp talking, sharp dressing.
Name of your finisher.
Oh, well, geez, it was the Swanton bomb, and it was just nice. The Swanton bomb, right. Which I look back on now, and I cringe looking at that. I'm like, how did I not break my neck or legs doing this? What a stupid move that was.
But you loved it. But that's the love of professional wrestling coming through, you know, in doing stuff in your back garden like that.
So I was 16 and 17 when I did this, and you think you're invincible at that age. So like we would go to like, I remember going to like fireworks displays in the park and be hanging out with like a bunch of our other high school friends. And my buddy would just be like, hey man, let's do a power bomb. And I would take a power bomb in the middle of like a field, or like I would just suplex people because you get that reaction. And that's part of why I loved wrestling, because of that instant reaction you would get from the crowd. And that's part of why I love doing what I do now. Like, not because you don't get an instant reaction with hosting, but you're able to affect people. And that's what I really loved about it.
As well as running HC Dub, you had time to step away from wrestling because your other pastime, almost the binary opposite in terms of like pace and style and such, because you're a keen fisherman.
Yes, very big into bass fishing. And you're right. It's so juxtaposed from not just wrestling, but also from like, if you watched me on TV, like I was just hosting the show in Miami for the last 5 years, I'm on there wearing like nice suits and like the nice socks, like you mentioned, like I'm on red carpets and interviewing these massive stars in the world. And then Friday night, I would like pack my pickup truck up, hitch my boat up to it, and I would drive up to the lake and I would fish in tournaments. And sometimes I would fish in like pro-am tournaments. I was the amateur, but yeah, I was as involved in fishing as I've been in wrestling. Like that, my hand is like deep into this. And that was a big part of me. And I don't fish as much now, but I actually have a fishing company. We sell tungsten fishing weights. So for bass fishing, that's the thing that like helps get your bait like sunk down to the bottom. And of course, tying in the wrestling with the fishing, it's called Woo Tungsten.
To beat the fish, you have to catch the fish. You could probably come up with something better.
Wow. I'm going to trademark that right now.
It's yours. It's my gift to you. It's my gift to you.
Wow. You're too kind.
What got you into fishing?
I don't, like, there's nothing specific about it. Like, I'd love to say, oh, my dad fished or my grandfather fished, but we used to go to our neighbor's cottage in the summer, and they were on a lake, and I was 4 years old, and there was no one really else around my age. My sister's 4 years older than me. All the other kids there were, you know, 4, 5, 6 years older than me. So they put me out on a dock with this plastic fishing rod, and I caught my first ever fish. It was a rock bass. And ever since that moment, I was hooked. Pardon the pun. Ha! That was really bad. But I was hooked. That was it. I was all in on fishing, and I wanted to do it all the time. And it became a thing for me. Like, I also played baseball growing up. I played hockey growing up. I was on the wrestling team, as I mentioned. And it's funny that a lot of that had to take a back seat to fishing because I was that into fishing. I had a couple of years when I was probably 14, 15, 16, where I was fishing like 180, 190 days a year. It was a lot of fishing. And it's funny that like I would ride my bicycle down to I was close to Lake Ontario, which is one of the Great Lakes, which had a lot of these rivers that flowed out of it. And that was like, especially in the spring and the fall, without getting too in depth here with fishing, but in the spring when the trout would run and in the fall when the salmon would run, like I was down there literally every single day, to the point where our high school backed onto a creek and I had a fishing rod in my locker. So there were times when I would go out fishing during my lunch break, catch a few salmon, take some photos, let them go, and then go back to my class, probably smelling like fish.
What did your class, obviously you said, oh, your classmates pulled you up on the whole wrestling is fake, da da da, fake stuff, do the real stuff in here. What did your classmates make of you nipping out and going fishing?
Yeah. I was so into fishing as soon as I got into high school that they were just like, oh yeah, of course that's what he would do. Like, people called me fish. They called me fish boy, Fishman. Like, I was that. Like, when I get into something, Tom, I go 1,000% in. I dive all the way into this, whether that's fishing or it's wrestling or it's now business or TV hosting. Like, I dive all in on this, and I was all in on fishing. So people were just like, oh, of course you would do that. That's exactly what someone who loves fishing would do.
Well, it's the sign of a successful personality, isn't it? It's somebody that just throws themselves into whatever project it is 100%, whether it's a leisure activity or a business one. And you've obviously proved successful in pretty much everything you've turned your hand to.
Well, thank you for saying that. I just think that there's no point in half-assing it. I think that if you're going to go into something, go in with your whole ass. But I think that you need to go in with all of it. Otherwise, it's just a waste of your time. And I think there's nothing worse, and we all have that friend. There's nothing worse than the person who talks about doing stuff, talks, and then never actually does anything. And I think that there's two types of people in this world. There's doers and there's sayers. And I don't want to just be a sayer. If I'm going to say I'm going to do something, I want my word to be gold. I want you to take me at my word. So if I say I'm going to do something, you know that I'm going to follow through and actually do that.
Is there anything outside of, obviously, you've done the fishing world, you've wrestled yourself, you worked as an announcer as well, you're in an interview for AEW, which we'll talk about in a bit. Lots of stuff involved in wrestling, lots to do with fishing and TV hosting. Is there anything that you haven't done yet that you are genuinely thinking of going whole ass into?
Yeah, acting's next for me, actually. So I've dabbled a little bit in it. I've you know, being a news reporter, I've been hired in a few movies to play a news reporter. So if you've seen, like, actually like some big movies, like I'm in Criminal Activities with John Travolta. I play a news anchor in that. I'm in a movie called The Bronze with Sebastian Stan, better known as, you know, the Winter Soldier. I'm in The Love Guru with Mike Myers. So I've actually been taking acting lessons for the last 3 months, and I was supposed to move to Los Angeles last week. I was supposed to pack up my car, move it out there, and I was going to dive right into as much hosting as I could, as much entertainment reporting as I could, which is definitely what my background has been, but also into the acting world. So I'm not saying I'm going to be the next Will Smith or Sandra Bullock or something, but I'm going to give this my all. And it's something that just brings me great pleasure. And being on a movie set is just really exciting. There's a certain amount of energy there. Even in the tiny roles I've had where I have literally one or two lines, there's just a real excitement there. And anybody listening to this who's been on a movie set, you know the food is incredible on a movie set.
Best thing you've eaten on a movie set.
So it's funny, funny story about that. The first movie I was on was The Love Guru. That was the first big movie. That was 2007 when we filmed it. It came out in 2008. And they separated it from, like, if you were actually, like, part of the acting union, you got to eat this food over here, which was like gourmet, amazing, like steaks and turkey. Like, there's a guy there carving it. And everybody else, which was like me and most of the other people I met on that set, were like, you guys can go eat this food over here. And I just thought that was so funny. But the best food, like, they've got everything. And that's the cool thing about being on these movie sets, the catering, the craft services, as they call it. My God, it's amazing. But I'm a pretty simple man. Like, just feed me pizza or chicken and I will be happy forever.
You talk about packing up and going to Los Angeles. And I'm always intrigued by when I know when people say that and they say, I'm going to go and seek my fortune in L.A. Like, what's the plan when you get there? Is it just a case of once I'm there, I need to make jazz happen? Or do you have things that you're planning to do when you're out there?
Yeah, well, I think if you don't have a plan going out there, you're just going to fail. So,
well, that's it, because the way a lot of people always talk is so it sounds so Hollywood, ironically, in the fact they say, I'm going to pack up my life, I'm going to go to L.A., and that's where I'm going to get started. It's like, what, and do what? I'd be the person that would pull up and go, all right, I'm here now. I'm just going to have a sandwich, sit down for a bit. Like, I was just curious what the plan was.
Well, and unfortunately, that's what most people do. I think most people go, oh, I've been in a few theater plays in my local town. I can go to Hollywood. And they'll drive their car out to Hollywood with $500 in their pocket and realize, A, Los Angeles is a very expensive city, and B, more importantly, they didn't have a plan. So I'm in a bit of a different scenario here. Like, I can work from wherever. You know, a lot of what I'm doing now is my YouTube interviews and also my podcast. So I can do that from anywhere. And as you probably know, I'm not afraid to fly or drive to make these interviews happen. So Los Angeles is actually going to be a much more central location for me. A ton of wrestlers live in Los Angeles. A ton of wrestlers live in Las Vegas, which is about a 5-hour drive. And I've been spending so much time in LA over the last 10 years working as a TV host and entertainment reporter. I probably was in LA at least once a month for the last 10 years. So I feel like it's already kind of my second American home. So it doesn't feel like it's a big transition. It just kind of feels like the next logical step. I have more friends living in Los Angeles than any other city. So it's just a matter of like, it wasn't a matter of if it was going to happen. It was a matter of when is this going to happen? And if I'm being completely honest, I thought it was going to happen a long time ago. Like I spent 5 years hosting shows in Canada and just kind of thought like, well, when I'm ready to make the move to the US, I'll just go to LA or New York. And it didn't happen like that. I went to Cleveland first. Had an amazing time as an entertainment reporter for the CBS affiliate there. I covered the Oscars and the Grammys. And then I went from there to Miami and the same thing, had an amazing time working on a great show and interviewing the biggest stars in the world and telling great stories. But now the next step is like it needs to be Los Angeles. And that's what it's all about. You know, you just got to make it happen for yourself. I think that too many people move to Hollywood thinking they'll get discovered walking along Hollywood Boulevard, or they'll get discovered because they're, you know, serving in a, they're working as a waiter in a big restaurant. That's not how it happens. It happens by going out and paying your dues and actually putting in the work. And that just goes with anything, goes for anything in life.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Second match for your DVD. So we have Rock and Hogan at WrestleMania 18. What else is going on there, Chris?
We spent so much time talking about that one, so thank you for that. And it went off into these many, many tangents. But number two,
I love it,
on that list is a match I've watched hundreds of times, and I just love the fast-paced action of this match. And it's AJ Styles versus Christopher Daniels versus Samoa Joe in 2005. And that match is, I think that that really was the match that put TNA on the map. And that was the match that made a lot of people go, oh, wow, there's some great wrestling happening outside of WWE.
It's time for the signature division of TNA to take center stage. It's time for the X Division Championship match. And here are the X Factors. Back in August, the unbeaten Samoan submission machine, Samoan Joe, captured the Super X Cup to become the number one contender. The Fallen Angel, X Division champion. He may have influenced the outcome last month at Sacrifice, but TNA officials insisted that AJ Styles deserves to be included in the three-way. At Unbreakable, they're going to settle their differences. X Division title goes to the wrestler who scores the first submission or pin. Will it be Samoa Joe, the phenomenal AJ Styles, or the champion Christopher Daniels?
And that match goes 100 miles an hour from the time the bell rings until the time the match ends. And it's interesting because I interviewed Christopher Daniels. No, sorry, I was interviewing Ethan Page, who's been doing a lot of stuff with Impact and their Twitch stream. And he said that that's the only five-star match in the history of TNA, which blows my mind. There's been so many great matches in TNA. But if there is going to be a five-star match, that's the one.
It's what stands out about that particular one, before we get into actually the quality of the match itself, was it put TNA in a position where they could stand out, because it was the X Division Championship going on last.
And I think for a lot of people, they thought the X Division was the Cruiserweight Division, which I guess kind of was, and it certainly shared some elements with that. But it also, you know, for a lot of people, seeing Samoa Joe for the first time doing what Samoa Joe can do, they went, oh, maybe they're right. Maybe this isn't about weight limits. It's about no limits. And I thought that that match is just something I will go back to frequently. And I'm blown away by it. And here we are 15 years later, and that match still stands the test of time.
Where were you when you watched it?
I didn't watch it live. And that's the thing. I wasn't really a big TNA fan at the time. And I was graduating from college at the time, so I wasn't watching as much wrestling as I was, as certainly as I'm watching now and I was watching in high school. I watched it on a DVD like a few months later. And I think a friend was just like, hey, man, have you seen this match? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen some X Division stuff. He's like, oh, no, you need to see this. And that opened the door for me when I watched that match, because then I started really getting into the Ultimate X matches, which, boy, those things were mind-blowing to me. And I love that TNA did so many things that were different. And I think that in wrestling, it feels like everything's been done before. And TNA really went out of their way to create some interesting stuff, but also some different stuff. And I was such a huge TNA fan kind of from that point on, like 2006, 2007, into 2008, I was probably watching more TNA than anything else.
What people forget is that at this point in time, TNA in different forms, obviously Impact, briefly Global Force and all that, has actually been around longer than WCW was.
Yeah.
Isn't that
ridiculous?
That's
an interesting observation. Yeah, and it's so sad to, you know, see what TNA was 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and then to see what it is now. And I just feel like they really had the chance to capitalize on something. And, you know, I don't know who you need to point the finger at, but it's sad that they weren't able to capitalize on that when they had the chance to capitalize on it. And I know that everyone laughs. Oh, TNA tried to go head to head with Raw. If you look at those numbers now, TNA, yes, they paled in comparison and obviously realized their mistake quickly and went back to their normal night. But they were getting 3 million viewers when they were going head-to-head with Raw, which I think was getting like 5 or 6 or 7 or whatever it was at the time. But 3 million viewers, like that's a huge number.
SmackDown would kill for 3 million now.
Oh, and that wasn't on network, which SmackDown is on network television. You know, this was on Spike TV, which was such a great home for TNA. And I think as soon as that deal went with Spike TV kind of, you know, went away, it was like, well, I don't even know what channel to find it on anymore. And that's been a tough thing. But I appreciate what Impact's doing now. And this is not a slight on Impact Wrestling. I appreciate what Impact's doing now. And they have actually some pretty impressive storylines now. It's just, I feel like they need to do something to spark that energy again and get people excited about it again.
Who's your one to watch currently in Impact?
What Sami Callihan's doing right now with this new gimmick, I think is really interesting. And I sat down with him about a month ago when he was doing the gimmick, but the gimmick hadn't aired yet on TV. So he was like, hey, let's wait till this airs on TV before we, like, you know, kind of show this to the world. We don't want to have any like spoilers. But there's a guy who's, I think, just incredible at reinventing himself and finding a way for his character to work with either what he's invented or what he's been handed. And I'm excited to see where he goes with this gimmick. So Sami Callihan, completely underrated, I think.
You talk about sitting down with Sami Callihan. He's one of hundreds of wrestlers that you've spoken to over time. We've talked about the journeys that you go on to go and make these interviews happen. But can you remember the first interview that you did? And as a wrestling fan, it's okay to do it. But the first wrestling interview that you did that genuinely you were nervously excited about doing?
Well, my first ever wrestling interview had all of those qualities, and it was Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley, 2007, and I was working for the MTV2 network in Vancouver. So this was a huge show for me and a huge break for my career. And we were interviewing a lot of musicians. We were interviewing a few actors. And then I saw that WWE was coming to town. So I reached out to WWE, and I didn't have a contact there. I just basically did whatever. I'm like, I want to interview a wrestler. I was so excited about it. So I reached out to them and said, hey, I see you're coming here next month. I would love to do an interview with literally anybody. And they said, oh, well, we're bringing Bobby Lashley to town next week to do some like press for it. Would you like to be added to that interview list? And I'm like, yes, for sure. And they're like, well, it's going to be done at like 8 a.m. And I didn't start work till 9 a.m. I'm like, yes, I will come in an hour for work, early for work. We'll make this happen. And the interview was not great. I reposted this last summer. It was nothing to do with Bobby. Bobby was fantastic. He was actually the ECW champion at the time. So I was cool, like having him come to the TV station with the ECW championship. He let me hold it in the photos. It was awesome. I actually reposted this video last summer to just kind of show people like, hey, this is where I started, compared to where I'm at now. I'm like, just know that like we all have the ability to make some progress along our journey. And we edited the interview, so it actually, it flows and it sounds okay, but the interview wasn't awesome. It's not something I'm super proud of, but I was proud of the fact that I made it happen. Someone didn't, like an assignment editor didn't hand this to me and go, here's the person you're going to interview. I went out of my way to make this happen, and that's why I was so proud of that one.
I think that's what I love, and I'm learning more about you in speaking to you, is that you're an amazing example of you make your opportunities.
Oh, 1,000%. Like, talking about that job in Vancouver, the way I got that job, and by the way, Vancouver from where my hometown was is 3,000 miles away. It was a 47-hour drive to get there when I did get the job. But I sent in my stuff for this job. I saw the job posting. They were looking for a host with 2 years experience, which is exactly what I'd had. I started off my career as a news reporter in this very small town called Peterborough, Ontario. And I was driving an hour each way, living in my parents' place and going there for work. It started as an internship, which turned into a job. And then when I saw this other one, I'm like, this is great. I don't want to be a news reporter for the rest of my life. I just feel like I'm too young and I want to report on things that are more positive and happy. So I sent in my stuff for this job and I didn't hear anything back. But in the job posting was the name of the person who was doing the hiring. So I waited about a week and I called the TV station. I just randomly called the front desk and said, oh, hi, is so-and-so there, please? And they said, yeah, 1 minute. And I'm like, what? And they actually connected me to the desk of the person who was doing the hiring.
Wow.
And she didn't answer the phone, but I left a voicemail. She emailed me back and said, hey, we're looking at the stuff. We'll get back to you if we're interested. In her email was her direct phone line. So I'm like, well, I am going to be using that if I don't hear back from them. Sure enough, didn't hear back from them. A week later, I called her at her desk and said, hi. It's Chris Van Vliet. I emailed you last week, and I just wanted to see if you've had a chance to look at my stuff. Well, we haven't looked at it yet, but, we'll get to it. I said, well, I just want to let you know that I'm going to be in Vancouver next week, next Thursday. I would just love to come in and just chat with you about the job if you have the time. And that was a total and complete lie. I wasn't going to be on the other side of the country, a 5-hour flight away. But she said, oh, well, if you're going to be here, yeah, come on in. It'd be great to talk to you. So I hung up the phone and instantly booked a flight and basically created this opportunity for myself. Flew there, got myself a hotel, and went in for the interview. And within 5 minutes, they offered me the job. And that was what was, it was so gratifying because I created this opportunity for myself. I believed in myself and I bet on myself that I had the skill set to get this job, but they weren't going to see me. They weren't going to bring me in for an audition. So I put the odds in my favor. I said, if you're not going to bring me in, I will bring myself in. So yeah, that's kind of been, I mean, that's almost been every job I've ever got. So that's kind of been the story of my life. People just need to realize that you're aware of what your skill sets are and you just need to double down on them. Like, just bet on yourself. And this isn't an idea of like trusting your gut. This is like knowing what you're good at and becoming better at that thing. And then, you know, like this job I have in that I had in Miami. Once again, they didn't want to pay the money to bring someone in, which is a pretty common thing, I think, in most lines of work. I happened to be going to Disney World in Orlando like that weekend. And I said, look, I know Orlando's not close to Miami. It's about a 3.5 hour drive. I said, if I call into work sick on Monday, change my flight from Orlando to Miami and rent a car, this is what I'm saying to my agent. I said, do you think that they'll give me an audition? She calls me back 20 minutes later. She's like, yeah, yeah, they'll see you Monday night at 8 o'clock. I'm like, okay. So I did it. I rented a car, changed my flight, called into work sick, did all of this. And it all paid off because I ended up getting that job.
Do the people that you worked for know that you faked being sick? Because now I think it's a good time to apologize.
Well, that was the job that I left. And look, I was really, I'm not someone who calls into work sick often. I'm a big believer in like, in honesty. And I never wanted to be one of those people who like the alarm rang. Oh, I don't feel like going to work today. Oh, sorry, boss. not feeling well today. I was never one of those people. This was probably like one of three sick days I used in 5 years. So to answer your question, no, they didn't know. But then I ended up leaving 2 months later. So I'm sure it kind of all made sense to them. But also, I wasn't someone who was calling into work often.
Before we get to your final match on your DVD, you're also about to take a movie, an album, and a luxury item, Chris.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to take the greatest movie of all time, Back to the Future.
Oh, which one?
Well, number one, I think, is the best. Although, two, I think, oh, man, the way Zemeckis, Robert Zemeckis, the director, envisioned the future, which obviously happened 5 years ago in 2015. But the way that he envisioned the future, I think, was amazing. And then number three is a nice little bow on top of the whole story. But I think number one has everything. It's nothing. It's the closest thing I think you can get to the perfect film. It has drama and it has comedy. It has moments where you want to cry because you're happy. It has moments where you want to cry because you're sad. It has amazing characters. It has it all.
How about an album?
I think the album I'd have to bring would be the album that was kind of like a turning point for me in my adolescence. And it's Blink-182's Enema of the State. And when I started listening, I was, you know, I would have been 16 when that came out. And that was just the album that, like, I put that on and I'm like, this band is speaking right to me. And all my friends loved it. And there's always great memories attached to all the songs on that album. You know, All the Small Things and What's My Age Again. I mean, we can go through the whole album, but music's really interesting. And music has that ability to transport us to a place and to a time. And for me, that place and time was high school and like in either my backyard or my friend's backyard where we used to like listen to it and have these parties. And it was just such a special time because like that was when I was really starting to come into my own as, you know, a quote unquote adult, I guess.
With music, it is incredible. And now that we live in the era that we do, we've got access to so much more. What's the last three songs you have on a playlist, Chris?
Oh, wow. My playlists now are mostly just a collection of like, oh, I like that song. I'll add it onto there. Not like, I need to go listen to this, you know, because I'm going to go for a run or whatever. And if I'm being completely honest with you, I don't listen to music as much now as I listen to podcasts or I listen to books on tape. And I used to, like, when I was commuting to any of the jobs that I've commuted to, I was often just putting on music and just listening to it on the ride. And then I thought, well, here's my commute was like 40 minutes each way. So I'm like, well, here's an opportunity to learn something, to expand my mind. So I now use that time to listen to a podcast where I can hopefully, you know, take a little bit of their knowledge and make it mine. Or I'll listen to a book on tape. And, you know, after a week of commuting, well, you've just, quote unquote, read a book. So that's actually what I do a lot of my listening with now.
Hit us with a podcast that you have been listening to lately that you've enjoyed.
I love listening to a podcast called On Purpose with Jay Shetty. And another one is The School of Greatness with Lewis Howes. And it's just like they do these interviews with people who are at the absolute top of their game, whether it's athletes or actors or entrepreneurs. And it's basically it's a podcast that breaks down their mindset and how they got to be in the place that they're at right now. And you find that even though these people might have different professions, a lot of the same stuff, it remains the same, you know, through all successful people. So it's interesting. I bet you thought I was going to list off some wrestling podcasts, but I did not.
Do you know what? No, I didn't. I genuinely didn't, Your Honor. Not guilty. Only because I find that it's nice to hear that, because so many times when you work so closely in wrestling, that you want to sometimes do stuff that isn't wrestling, even though you love it.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. And as much as I love wrestling, and I more than anything love having these conversations about wrestling, I'm not like the crazy, like, Rain Man nerd when it comes to, like, oh, well, the finish of the 2004 Survivor Series wasn't as good as the finish of the 2005 Survivor Series. I'm not that guy. I appreciate it for what it is, but I'm not, like, breaking down, like, I think one of the biggest problems with wrestling fans and wrestling podcasts is people are too quick to focus on the negatives. And I think that if you focus on the negatives in that, you're probably focusing on the negatives in other aspects of your life as well. And that's just not what I want to do. I'd rather lead with positivity.
Your luxury item, sir, for the island.
Can I bring my iPhone?
Like, you can't make calls.
Is that a luxury
item?
Okay. do I have internet service?
We have a satellite that goes over every hour, so you could probably pick up the odd message. So,
all right. Well, if I can still, like, watch YouTube videos and make YouTube videos using the camera on my phone, which then every hour I can upload to your satellite, I think I'll do that.
Brilliant. I like the fact that you're
using. What do most people use for their luxury item? What's a popular answer for the luxury item?
Toilet-related things, weirdly.
Oh, yeah, I probably should have thought about that one.
We've had bidets, toilet paper, a toilet roll, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. I did an interview for, like, a period piece movie, and I always thought an interesting question was, like, what's the one modern-day luxury you would miss from, you know, if you were living in that era? And most people go, oh, yeah, I miss the phone, or I'd miss my TV or whatever. And I'm trying to think of who it was that I interviewed, and they went, oh, well, I would miss a refrigerator. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's a great point.
I suppose you would.
He's like, yeah, most people are going to go technology-based. He's like, I would miss a fridge, and I would miss, like, being able to, like, cook meals on a stove. I'm like, huh, yeah, would you look at that's a really good point. So, yeah, maybe I should have thought this one out.
Is this you suggesting you want to take a fridge instead of an iPhone?
But I mean, with how good's the fridge going to be if I don't have, like, food, you know? Like, I'm on a desert island. What am I going to be eating?
You might kill a boar.
A lot of fish.
And you might want to have some of the boar later. Actually, yeah. You know what? Chris, why haven't you taken a fishing rod?
Oh, wow. Well, no, you know what? That doesn't need to be a modern luxury. I'm sure I could craft some sort of fishing rod there. I think I could figure something out.
Thought you might want, like, a top end, you know, Catchmaster 9000 or whatever.
Yeah, I want the Shimano Corrado DC for all my bass fishing friends out there.
With some woo tungsten attached, you know.
Woo tungsten.
Sorry, woo tungsten.
That's it. That's the correct way to pronounce it.
Chris. Chris, we've got one more match to add to your DVD. What would you like it to be, sir?
I think the match that has to be added to this DVD is a match that, once again, I've watched hundreds of times. And a match that really opened my eyes to what was possible for both of these performers. And it was Cactus Jack versus Triple H, Royal Rumble 2000.
They call you Cactus Jack.
They call you Triple H.
King of the Deathmatch.
The WWF Champion.
The myth that lost an ear in Munich.
The man that will go to any length to win.
Barbed wire scars.
C4 explosives.
Blood, sweat, and tears.
Maimed, crippled, and injured men. Your entire career.
Some say you shoot from the hip.
You will lose this street fight.
I say you just shoot your mouth off.
Some say you can't be beat.
I am the game.
I say I've played this game before and won.
I am Triple H.
I am Cactus Jack.
Some call me sick and sadistic.
I am the sickest SOB in the business.
I call myself champion. The World Wrestling Federation champion.
There will be no laughter,
no laughter,
no regret,
no regret,
no remorse.
I think we kind of had seen what Mick Foley was capable of. Certainly had seen it in the Hell in a Cell match with The Undertaker. But I don't think we had really seen it to this extreme, certainly not in WWE. And I don't think that anyone thought going into that match that Triple H was capable of both taking this and giving this. So that was a match, and I was a huge Triple H fan around that time. So that was a match for me that I went, wow, this takes things to a whole new level.
Do you recall the night that Mankind became Cactus Jack?
I do. I do. I'd heard, you know, about Cactus Jack from, you know, his time before, but I really wasn't familiar with him. And I was just familiar with Mankind, which I think was a great character. And look, Mick Foley's just, man, one of the best of all time. And whether he's Dude Love, whether he's Mick Foley, whether he's Mankind, or whether he's Cactus Jack, I think that he's insanely talented. And I remember when he was like, Cactus Jack is the right person for this match. And I'm like, oh my God, like things are about to get crazy.
With that particular match, talk us through where you were when you watched it.
First of all, let me just say, Tom, that I love that I could name literally any match that has happened in the history of wrestling. And you and I didn't discuss beforehand what these matches were, but I love that you are so knowledgeable about wrestling that you would be able to follow the conversation and guide the conversation. Even if I like named off some ridiculous match from like 1991 or something like that.
I'm a geek and I'm proud of it.
No, I think this is amazing. So I actually watched that match live on pay-per-view, and I remember just being like, what? There's thumbtacks? What are they doing? This is insane! Because I hadn't seen that other than like a few clips here and there. YouTube didn't exist back then. This was 2000. So some clips here and there that people had posted to message boards, because that's how things were. Or stuff that you were downloading from LimeWire. Oh, yeah. LimeWire back in the day. That's where most of us got our wrestling matches and wrestling content from. So watching that, I was like, they've taken this to a whole new level. And I love that they allowed it to go to that level.
I like the fact that you admitted that you download on LimeWire.
Uh-oh, is the statute of limitation done, or am I going to get in trouble here for that?
I think enough time has passed. I think everybody gets
okay.
It.
Okay.
But I also love that this is the second week in a row that a LimeWire reference has made it into Desert Island Grabs. That's the bit I'm proud of. We had our last guest, TK Cooper, who talked about downloading music off LimeWire, and now we've got this. So the wrestling world is a hotbed of activity. I'll ask you, actually, the same question I asked TK Cooper the other week, which is, did you ever, whilst using LimeWire, accidentally download the file definitely Royal Rumble 2000 and not a virus .exe.
Of course, like I would say it probably took what 2, 3, 4, maybe sometimes 5, you know, tries to get the movie or the song or the wrestling match that you wanted, because I don't know what was in it for those people that put their usernames in the file name, and it was like 1 capital letter, 2 lowercase, 3 capital letters, 4 lowercase. Like, what was with those people? I don't get why they were trying to like do this to us. All I want to do is watch that movie or match, listen to that song, and they would screw us.
Chris, this has been the most wonderful time. It's been so good to chat with you today about everything, and I want to give you the floor to plug everything that you're up to, where you're at, what you're doing, where people can find you. This is your time, sir.
Well, I want to thank you, Tom. I'm super grateful for this opportunity, and I hope that you continue doing what you're doing, because you guys are just absolutely crushing it. And I want to thank you.
Thank you for
your time, but also for what you bring to the world of wrestling. So thank you. And you can find me online. It's just my name, at Chris Van Vliet, VanVliet. And if you're not subscribed on YouTube, maybe you could take 3 seconds today to click that subscribe button and help me out. If Cultaholic, subscribes to me, then maybe you should as well.
Chris, when all this is over, can we go fishing?
Please. Yeah, but you'd probably come here. There's better fishing, I think, in America. So come here. But I'm usually in the UK like 2-3-ish times a year. So when this is all over, I will be in the UK, and I look forward to having that beer with you.
Yes! Oh, mate, like, can we do another catch-up interview?
Well, then you're going to be on my channel, too.
Oh, yes!
Film this while fishing. Oh, my God. I don't know. That might be too much. That might be my world colliding too much. I don't know.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.